Hi, this is Dr. Peter Osborne, and I'm on the phone with Samantha Taylor. She is the creator of a system to help people kick their sugar cravings and their sugar addictions and habits. And so I want to welcome her because she's here tonight to share a lot of great information about sugar and some of its detriments and how it can impact our health. So welcome tonight, Samantha, and thanks for sharing your knowledge and taking the time to be with us and doing this interview.
Thank you, and I'm very impressed with your stuff, your information about how you're helping people get healthy, so I just kind of wanted to team up with that.
Well, appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you got into sugar addiction and just a little bit more about where you started and how you ended up creating something to help so many people?
Well, I think the first thing that's important to know is I am a health professional. I've been a personal trainer for 19 years. I have helped thousands of people through my radio show, TV show, books I've written, through personal training. And at the height of helping people, I was struggling with my sugar addiction. So it's not something that I didn't have a head knowledge. Oh, sugar is not good for you. You shouldn't eat that. It was truly an addiction for me that I did not know how to stop. And I was in a large corporate gym. I was the number one producing personal trainer out of 2,000 trainers. And I don't say that to toot my own horn. I say that to say, of anybody you think I should be able to overcome this addiction with all the knowledge and information that I had about the body. And it's just something that I was a sugar addict ever since I was a child. And if you have children, you better believe that most sugar addicts start off as addicts as children. So I was a sugar addict ever since I was a kid, and I was pretty much a sugar addict for almost 30 years. And I did not start getting victory over it until about 2 years ago. And that's just the part of the thing that about 6 years ago, I started to try and come off of it. I read books, I studied, I researched, but it still was not enough to fix me. So after over about 6 years, I developed this system of how to actually break my own sugar addiction, and I really have nailed it down into about a 14-day process. So that's the exciting thing. It doesn't take 6 years. I have found most people that follow my system can break it within 7 to 14 days.
Wow, so you've just taken your experience and kind of accelerated that.
Right, and I'm a major, like, researcher. I wanna document stuff. I can't just take something and go, oh, yeah, that worked. I document everything. So for 2 years, I documented every time I ate sugar, how I felt, what my thoughts were going through my head before I ate it, how I felt during, and how I felt after and that next morning. So for 2 years, I had that documentation. So I started to watch patterns of what triggered me to eat sugar, understanding that I normally would regret it after I was done because I would always binge or overconsume it. And I just really started to really get more of a realistic connection with what sugar was doing to my body.
It's interesting that you say that you documented your symptoms and your feelings and your emotions. Tell us a little bit about sugar addiction. I mean, a lot of people eat a lot of sugar, and they don't really consider themselves to be addicted to sugar. So kind of define a little bit what sugar addiction is and what are some of the things that people might manifest or what are some of the symptoms that people might have that are addicted to sugar.
Well, the interesting thing about a sugar addiction is a lot of people do express it in different ways. And a lot of research was done by a doctor, her name is escaping me right now, but she actually kind of started the whole idea of sugar addiction about 10 years ago, and she came up with this term called sugar sensitivity. And she found that the chemistry of the body of someone that becomes addicted to sugar is different for someone that doesn't have that same chemistry, just like an alcoholic cannot have just a drink and it not turn into a problem, whereas someone that's not an alcoholic, you can have a drink and it's no big deal. And that is definitely connected to your body chemistry. So she really came up with that term about sugar sensitive, and when I started researching that, that was what I researched 6 years ago, but it still didn't help me overcome my sugar addiction, because what I have found is that sugar addiction can be very emotional and physically addictive, not just chemically, like in your brain and in your body, but where it's a coping mechanism where you actually get addicted to the highs and then the crashes, then you're addicted to fixing the crash. So an example of what a sugar addict looks like is a sugar addict is somebody that typically has sugar in some form, some way, every day, every couple of days. They tend to always want something sweet after a meal or a dinner. They tend to have issues with portion control with sugar addiction. Like, it's never just one cookie, it's 10 or 20 cookies. They tend to binge on sugar. Now, I find that not all sugar addicts binge on sugar, but there's a certain percent that will eat until they feel ill. And I was one of those people. I never made myself vomit, but I would eat 5,000 calories in sugar literally in one sitting until I felt so sick that I thought I was going to throw up. And it was the only thing that stopped me from eating, or I would keep eating. So it really was an eating disorder from that perspective. But, you know, a sugar addiction is something where you just feel like you always want it. You don't feel like your life would be complete without it. You've tried to stop eating it, and you can't. And even if you get off gluten, you could still totally have a sugar addiction. And it's something that most sugar addicts say, it really consumes their mind. Like, they sit there at work and they start thinking about a sugar rendezvous that they want, and then they plan for like the next hour how they're going to fulfill this. They'll drive out of their way. They'll get up in the middle of the night. They'll go drive to get sugar. I mean, it really functions as an addiction.
Well, I could see that. We see very similar patterns in people that have gluten sensitivity. Like you said, there's a chemical issue that can underlie the addiction and why some people can eat a little bit and not have the addiction, whereas others can eat even a small amount and become addicted. It's the same thing with gluten sensitivity being a unique chemical reaction. So very interesting. So you've got this entity that this addiction is. So basically, what you're saying is sugar is kind of like a drug, for many people can be.
It can definitely function like a drug in certain people's bodies. And the thing that really interested me when I looked up the word drug in the dictionary, you know, go look up the word drug. It talks about something that becomes addictive, something that becomes habitual, meaning that it becomes like habit where you can't stop it. A drug is something where you feel like it controls you, where it's involuntary and can cause changes within your body. And that's also the definition of an addiction, something that becomes habitual where you literally feel like it's beyond your voluntary control. And that's what an addiction is, where you want to stop eating it, but you just don't know how to stop.
And so where then does a person begin? I guess they begin by recognizing that it's a problem in the first place.
Yes, that's where it really starts. I mean, the difference, Dr. Osborne, is you have to get to a place where, okay, we understand sugar tastes good. Yeah, I mean, sure, it tastes good, and that's really one reason why I thought I ate it all the time. But I really had to realize, regardless how good it tastes, I got fed up with the negative side effects, and I got fed up with feeling out of control. You want to talk about something that makes you tired? When you eat sugar all the time, you are so tired all the time typically. Sure, you might get a pick-me-up when you eat it, but it totally stresses out your adrenal glands. And the other thing is it highly suppresses your immune system. So if you're trying to get well and you're trying to feel better, let's say you've got some chronic health issues and you're getting gluten out of your diet, which is a very commendable thing, but you're not getting sugar out of your diet, you are never going to feel as phenomenal as you can when you're eating sugar all the time. It's extremely toxic. People that study it consider it as a poison. They literally do, and I know that that's an extreme statement, but the word poison is anything that causes inherent damage to the body, and that is sugar. It's very toxic. It's highly linked to osteoporosis, which most people don't realize that. And as you know, that's a major problem in our country with the weakening of the bones. And it's pretty fascinating when you start looking at it. So I think for anybody to get to a point where, okay, let's get past the flavor. Yes, the flavor's good, but the whole package, what does that whole package bring to your life? And if you've never been off sugar, just like you teach people with gluten, that if you've never been off gluten and you actually have a gluten allergy, you never know how awesome you can feel until you actually get it out of your diet, right?
Right, it's all relative. It's relative to the way you're used to feeling. And a lot of people will justify, I'm getting older, so I'm feeling worse, as opposed to looking at their own actions or inactions and whether or not those are conducive to their health. So I agree 100% with that, absolutely.
And that's the thing. I think for me, because it took me so long to come off the addiction, I finally broke it, and I went about 4 months without sugar, and I was so shocked at how I felt. I remember sitting in my car at a stoplight saying, if I felt any more awesome, I think I would just absolutely explode right now. I mean, that's how our bodies are created to feel. You should naturally feel that high and that phenomenal all the time. And if you don't, that means there's something off in your body. And I think you would appreciate this story because where I live at this condo, there was this alarm that was going off, and they were testing this building alarm. And they put a notice up in the elevator that said, you know, we're going to be testing this alarm. You don't have to, you know, run out of the building. So 9 o'clock in the morning, for an hour, this thing was announcing, please, can I have your attention, please? Can I have your attention, please? There is danger in this building. Please exit the building immediately. You know, when your body is tired and you don't feel good and you're constipated and you've got all these side effects, that's your body trying to say, can I have your attention, please? This building is about to burn down, and if you don't get out, you're going to really suffer. And some of you listening to this call are there where you've had the signals. Your body's been telling you something is wrong, and if you don't do something, you're going to pay for it big time in your health.
Yeah, I would agree. The symptoms are not necessarily, a lot of people call their symptoms the disease, and really what the body is just trying to do is trying to teach you to make a change or let you know you need to make a change, and if you don't, it's just going to progressively get worse.
And, you know, that's the amazing thing about our Creator. God knew that our body, we needed signals. But as you know, the unfortunate thing is that a lot of people wait until it's so bad that they already have cancer or already have a major disease. But their body was sending them signals for the last 10 years to try to tell them something was wrong. And, you know, I'm not somebody, I have to tell you, Dr. Osborne, I went through a phase over that 6 years where I decided that in my life I didn't want to be someone that said I could never, ever have sugar again. Because that was too legalistic for me, and it made me actually binge on it when I would have it because I never thought I could eat it again.
A good point to make. A lot of people will, with gluten sensitivity, have that same issue. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, not at all. And you know, that's something I had to figure out over that two-year process that I documented everything, because I went through a phase where I was like, okay, I'm never eating that again. And then I, through my documentation, would find out that I would binge because I would tell myself, oh, my gosh, I can never have this again. I'm eating it right now. So I kind of had to make a decision about 2 years ago. I said, okay, this is the deal. I understand. I don't still call myself a sugar addict because I don't believe in claiming you're still an addict when you're not functioning like an addict anymore. But I know that I have a sensitivity to sugar, and if I don't pay attention, I could be back into my sugar addiction as fast as a piece of apple pie. So you have to be very careful when you have had a past sugar addiction, because I don't know how many times I documented, oh, yeah, it's been so long, I think I'll have this cookie. And then all of a sudden, I didn't have my guard up, and I was back into a 3-month sugar addiction. So the process of the product that I've made, this 14-day system, is also about helping you not fall back into the addiction. And what do you do? What are the signs, you know, that you have if you are falling back into it? Because you have to address that. If you don't, you're going to be stuck up a creek without a paddle because you didn't figure out how to guard yourself when you actually get back into sugar again.
what's the old on the wagon, off the wagon, and a lot of people with gluten issues face that too. Actually, a lot of my patients, they'll kind of admit to me when I first went gluten-free, the day before I found out, I went and I had a complete binge. I went on a binger and ate everything gluten I could find because I had a sense that probably I was going to be gluten sensitive and was going to have to take it out for the rest of my life. So they go on these bingers, and when they come in and get their information, they're sicker than what they were when they originally came in to see me because they've just ingested such a ton of poison. Actually test patients too for, interesting to hear you say certain people have different chemistries that make them susceptible to sugar addiction, because in a number of my patients actually do food allergy testing, and we find that a large majority of them also too have sugar allergy. And so, you know, when we take gluten out of their diet, we also recommend that sugar comes out of the diet. And so I think a lot of those people would really benefit from what you've done and what you've found and what you've discovered and the tools and the methods that you use. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the different ways, the negative impacts that sugar has on your body, or maybe about some of the symptoms that you can experience when eating sugar for somebody who's gluten sensitive or for somebody who's sugar sensitive? What are some of the symptoms that a person might experience?
Well, some of the most common things are lethargy, really tired, it's hard to get out of bed in the morning, depression, headaches, joint pain. It's a major inflammer. And you know more than anybody probably how much inflammation is linked to every major disease that this country is suffering with, heart disease, cancer, diabetes. Inflammation, would you agree, is at the root of almost a lot of the diseases that we deal with?
Oh, absolutely.
So sugar is a known inflammatory substance. So if you eat that a lot, it will inflame the cells of your body. Arthritis, osteoporosis, those that study sugar call it skeleton powder because it is such an anti-nutrient. It is so void of nutrients that it literally, when you eat it, your body has to take your own minerals, specifically calcium, to try and process this substance because it's also very acidic. So when you eat sugar, it leaches calcium out of your bones. So let's say you are someone that has osteopenia or osteoporosis. You're taking a bunch of calcium supplements, but you still are a sugar addict. Those calcium supplements are not going to help you. Your body is not going to absorb that calcium. It's going to try and balance out your acidity. So it's just so connected to suppression of the immune system. Most children that eat a lot of sugar are sick all the time. They get the common cold all the time, which I know you notice with gluten sensitivity. But when I was a kid, I had a cold every month. I remember always having a runny nose and always having a cold as a kid. And it's something that, you know, our country is at such a precipice of health problems. When 1 out of 3 people die of cancer, 1 out of 2 die of heart disease, now diabetes has become an epidemic. And I believe, as well as many other professionals, that sugar is one of the big contributors to a lot of those health problems.
No, no doubt. I agree with you 100%.
I'm talking excess sugar, okay? I'm not talking about that donut here and there that you may eat. But remember, sugar addicts eat sugar in excess. They don't just have a donut once a month.
So let's kind of define, tell us a little bit about what excess would be. So, like, you know, you've got the average person who might have a treat, you know, at a birthday party or might on Halloween, might, you know, have some candy or at a Christmas party or whatever the case might be. What is the symptom? What is the sign? Or what do we look for in somebody with a sugar addiction? What's the frequency of consumption? Is it daily? Is it every other day? Or is it just that you go out of your way to make sure that you always have something available, like you were saying before?
Well, it depends on the level of sugar addiction you have. Some people don't have it every day, but when they do have it, they binge on it. And some people have it every day. I recently, and this is something that Dr. Osmond will probably send to you guys, have a quiz that I put together, and it is a great way for you to really know what level of sugar addiction you have. And I have had probably over 300 people fill out this quiz, and I would say a lot of sugar addicts do have it at least once a day, sometimes more than once a day. And the challenge is, as you know, processed foods have so much sugar in them. Cereals, juices, so much food that we eat has sugar in it already. You add that on top of a sugar addiction, and it adds to the average American consumes 155 pounds of sugar a year. Pounds. So you know those little five-pound bags you get, you know, of sugar? Mm-hmm. 155 pounds a year. That's not taking into consideration a sugar addict. That's an average consumption of a human being in this country.
That's
so,
a lot of sugar.
You know, that is a lot of sugar. And that's the thing is, like, it's not about the occasional thing. But the amazing thing, Dr. Osborne, is that as you get sugar out of your body, the taste of it becomes very different and too sweet. And I would have never thought this until I actually had it happen to me. There are times that I'll go back and have, like, my old so-called favorite dessert or, you know, something that I'm just like, oh, my gosh, that's just so sweet, I don't even like it. Now, granted, there are times that I'll go back and have something and go, oh, boy, this is, like, ridiculously unbelievable. It's good. So, you know, it's amazing how your taste buds become so accustomed to certain foods. And just to encourage anybody that is going the gluten-free lifestyle, that when you actually do change your taste buds and you start to eat this new way that you're probably going to learn from Dr. Osborne, you actually learn to really like it. And you learn to like to eat like that. And mostly you like it because you love the way you feel. You feel so phenomenal that it almost feels illegal to feel that good without drugs or alcohol. And there's no come down. There's no addiction to feeling great. It doesn't cost any money. And, you know, that's the thing is there is a natural high that you really should feel naturally when your body's healthy. But if you're not healthy, you're not going to feel that way, and you're just going to always feel like something's wrong with you.
Yeah, I agree. A lot of people talk about that natural high, and many experience it, and probably many more don't ever even get to that point because they never even look at food as the potentiator for their problems. They're either busy blaming age or genetics. So, you know, again, good to have this conversation because just opens the audience that we have up to one more element that says that, hey, yes, if gluten can cause damage to you as a unique individual who is gluten sensitive. And we know sugar is not good for us, but, you know, we take, you know, the average, like you said, the average sugar consumption of 155 pounds a year. Now you take that sugar and you say, okay, we know it's not good for us, but and now let's try to quantify how unhealthy it actually is for us and what disease process it's going to contribute to and how it's going to keep you from that natural high, from that feeling that your God-given right to be healthy, which is that natural high that so many people never achieve.
Yeah, and I think, you know, like what you were talking, you and I were talking about earlier, it's really important to, especially as many of your listeners go through this process, that it can't be this mindset that, oh, I'm just going to fix all this in 24 hours. This is going to be a life journey. You can't think that all of a sudden you're going to change everything you've ever done with your diet, especially if you are going gluten-free, and expect to get it perfect. You've got to have patience with yourself and understand that you will have times that you mess up and you maybe have something you're not supposed to eat and you're going to feel it in your body. And you just got to not beat yourself up, because I've been working on getting healthier and eating healthier for 19 years. This is not something that was just an overnight thing for me. And I think it's really powerful to take different you never need to be in a researcher or a scientist mind. You have to take out the variables. It's good to take certain parts out at a time. Like, okay, let's focus on getting gluten out. Okay, now we did that. Let's see what sugar is going to do to not have in your body. Okay, now you've got that. Let's look at dairy. And it's important to isolate those things, like you agree with.
Absolutely. I mean, again, the message is if one food can have a detriment on your health, why wouldn't we certainly look potentially at other foods? If going gluten-free is not enough, if going gluten-free doesn't recover your health, doesn't put your autoimmune disease in remission, then it just makes perfect sense to look towards some of these other foods, sugar being one of them. So, What else can you tell us about sugar that the average person wouldn't know, or that may help somebody kind of kick the habit?
Well, I think the first thing is really important to realize that it really can be addictive. And I did find some empowerment and understanding. Okay, I'm not just some freak that can't not eat 8 donuts. I actually am dealing with a possible addiction or a sensitivity or an allergy. And you're not going to function like a normal person. An addict does not function like someone that's not an addict. And it's important to recognize maybe I am a sugar addict. Maybe I am gluten sensitivity. And I remember you and I, you know, we've known each other for years, and we had a conversation in California, and you were telling me that I should get tested, and I dealt with that thing that I don't think I want to know. And you said, you remember that conversation we had at that little table? And you said, what, so you're just going to let it, like, destroy your health, and you're just, what if you really do have a problem? I mean, it's unfortunate that our society is conditioned to really only take action until our house is on fire or until we've been told we have cancer. You know, we are given so many opportunities to change our health, but honestly, I feel like our industry, our health and fitness industry, makes it too overwhelming for people. When you pick up a book about getting healthy or losing weight, they give you like 1,000 things that you have to change, and they literally basically tell you, you need to change basically everything that you do. And you can never do it, so then you try one day, and you totally screw up on Monday night, and then you're like, I'll just wait till next Monday. And then you're in this perpetual pattern of always going back to your old habits. So I really believe that if you can just focus on one thing at a time, or maybe a couple of things, and celebrate your progress. You know, I used to celebrate because I would document what I would eat. I noticed that if I had a large yogurt with all the toppings, I was really, really full, uncomfortably full, and I would be full for like 6 hours. So I told myself, okay, the next time I go, I'm going to get a medium and only half the toppings. And I would do that, and I would notice I was still really full. So then I would say, okay, I'm going to go, and I'm just going to get a small with no toppings. And I would celebrate the fact that that was an improvement. Whereas some legalistic people will say, oh, but you still had it. You know, that's not healthy. You just got to, something to celebrate when you actually made a better choice than you have before. And I think that's just so important that we don't get wrapped up in this perfectionism. Because if you have a perfectionist mindset, and I know there's listeners that got to hear this right now. If you have this perfectionist mindset that, oh, I have to go everything gluten-free and everything sugar-free, oh, my God, I got to do all this stuff. And then when you don't follow through, you feel like a failure. And you set this limit so high on yourself for success that it's unattainable. And then you just go back to your old habits. So, you know, it's kind of known as perfection paralysis, that you just give up. You say, well, living the way I used to live was easier because it's just habitual. Making all these changes is harder, but you know what? It's worth it. I know that many of you have known people that have died of cancer and died of heart disease and suffered with diabetes and had legs amputated and arms amputated and have gone blind. And you got to ask yourself a question and look yourself straight in the eye in the mirror and say, do I want that for my life? Do I accept that for my life? And when you say, no, I don't accept that, then that's when you start to make a change. But now that I mentioned diabetes is so related. I mean, sure, there's some myths that sugar doesn't cause diabetes, but eating too much sugar and eating too many refined carbohydrates that constantly whack out your blood sugar and your insulin definitely is contributed to diabetes. But in my research, I've found that most diabetics, when they go on the insulin and the drugs, they think that that's going to fix the problem, and they still struggle with sugar addiction. There was over 100,000 people that got a leg or an arm amputated last year due to diabetes and not managing their diabetes. So it's something that is it's so critical that, yeah, it might be like, well, I just really like dessert right now, and you might be younger, but I'm telling you, as you start to get older and it starts to catch up with you, you better believe that sugar had something to do with that.
Absolutely. I really like what you said about taking it at a pace. In my practice, what we see is we see those perfectionists, but then we see everything, you know, in between. So like the person who's completely resistant all the way up to the person who has to have 100% of it out right now today. And I say, just to add to what you said, I say if you're that perfectionist and you need to get it all out and you're good at cold turkey, if you're a cold turkey kind of person and that's the way you function and that's what works for you, then by all means, take advantage of that nature that you know yourself to be and go cold turkey. But if you're one of those people that, you know, it shuts you down to think about the overwhelming nature of removing a particular agent from your diet, then you've got to go in baby steps and you've got to take it at a pace that works for you so that you can still keep your sanity and celebrate those small victories until you get to a point where you can celebrate the big victory.
Definitely. And, you know, even if you don't do anything else, I mean, I hope that you do. I hope you take what we've talked about today and you read a little bit more of these emails and you, you know, go take the quiz and kind of investigate it a little bit more. But I encourage you to write down your experiences with sugar. Kind of do a little study with yourself and write down what triggered you, like what happened. Was it something emotional? You got in a fight or it was something you ate earlier that day or you just felt really tired. But then also write down how you feel, not just right after, but maybe an hour later, a couple of hours later, or that next morning. I'll share with you personally that in 2010, I found that I was drinking alcohol too much. Alcoholic, but I don't like anything that seems like it could become a problem. And me being an ex-addict, I don't like to do anything that seems like it's become way too habitual. So me and my husband set a goal for 2011 that we were going to try to go the entire year without drinking. And thanks be to God, I've made it 10 months with no alcohol. And I cannot tell you how much I love life sober now. It was hard the first month, but what I'm trying to relate to you is that what I did was for like all of 2010, I wrote down the times that I would drink, how the night ended. It was usually a fight with my husband or fell asleep on the couch watching a movie, and then you wake up the next day and you're totally unmotivated. So for me, drinking was really a two-day problem because then I was so unmotivated the next day. And, you know, you can only hit your head against the wall so many times before you realize maybe I shouldn't do this anymore. So I just, from documenting all the times that I drank, and of course you don't have to be that particular about it, but I just really realized the consequence of my actions. And I think that's the main thing, Dr. Osborne, is just taking that personal responsibility that the choices that you're making on a daily basis are affecting your health. And you know what? You're the only person that can motivate yourself and get yourself to do it. You know, you can pay someone to mow your lawn, and you can pay someone to do all that other stuff. And sure, you can pay a personal trainer to train you, but they're not with you all day. You've got to have that internal motivation inside yourself that you care about yourself, that you're valuable, and your health does matter, that you don't want to be one of those statistics that gets cancer or diabetes and has to get their foot amputated. I mean, this is serious stuff we're talking about.
Absolutely. Take some proactive response versus a reactive response, and you can save yourself from a potential disaster.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as I look at this, I mean, I've been in this industry for 19 years. I've had a lot of interaction with having my own radio show and writing books and stuff. And I just, as I look back at our country, I really believe that, of course, the whole diet mentality, oh, let's just do this diet for 7 days or 14 days and lose a bunch of weight and totally screw up our metabolism, that mentality doesn't help. But it becomes people that become more educated and understand, you know, I really need to look at the food consumption, the food habits that I have. One, what I learned from my parents, because that's traditionally learned from your family. But then also, what am I conditioned to by society? You know, we're like the oddballs of the group that doesn't eat gluten or you know, eats organic food or eats non-hormone, you know, filled hormone, drug-filled meat. I mean, that's the rarity, but yet that is the way to really be healthy. And if we look at the fact that that is the rarity, then, you know, the rest of the country that's not doing that, they're the ones that are really getting sick.
Yeah, but that's if kind of the way it's, but I always say it to you, you're being the same person in the room full of insanity. And that, you know, people will call or they will delineate you as a health nut, you know, and they'll try to cut you down for having a concern about your health. When in actuality, it's psychologically speaking, what they're really doing is they're attacking and lashing out at you to draw attention away from their own imperfections and their own ineptness to actually self-analyze and to improve upon themselves. And so they figure if they can call you a name or call you out, then it takes the attention away from them.
Hey, I'll take that name any day. Health nut? Woohoo! You better believe I'm a health nut. I'd rather
Amen
be a health nut than somebody that is blind and gets their arm cut off. And then I'll bet you that they're going to come to that health nut. They're going to say, hey, you know what? I think I need some help. What can I do?
Yeah, that's generally the way it works, isn't it?
That
well,
is.
Thanks to your help, I think that we're going to hopefully change a lot of people and change a lot of people's outcome and perspective along those lines. Hopefully everything we've talked about tonight will help our listeners to break those habits that maybe are not the healthiest and to help those that do have potentially a sugar addiction, first of all, identify that it's a possibility that they might, and second of all, if they do, seek out the right help and be able to solve and beat it and overcome it and regain and recapture their health.
Well, and that's the main focus I had with the quiz. It was to self-diagnose. It's basically questions to help you self-diagnose the level of your sugar addiction. And many people that fill it out, they're like, well, I don't really struggle with sugar. And then when they read the questions, they're like, wow. So one thing I encourage you to do is, you know, when you get healthier, you have to be careful about being too preachy to everybody or, oh, you shouldn't eat that, that's gluten, I can't believe you're eating that bread, or, you know, it you have to be really cautious on that. So one way that you can share the information is to forward your friends and family this email and say, hey, listen, I think you would really like to listen to this interview. Check this out. That's a non-obtrusive way to get them to kind of maybe think about their health a little bit without you preaching to them. So that's kind of a good way to just forward it to the people that you care about. I mean, I know people just forward it to everybody in their address book and say, hey, I just listened to a seminar. Wow, you got to hear this. And it's just a way to encourage other people to get healthy too.
Yeah, agreed. And the more you share, the more we can help more people. I mean, my million person mission is to help a million people go gluten-free or find that they need to go gluten-free. So, I mean, the way that works is through sharing of information that you find is pertinent and helpful for others. So, agreed. I'll make sure that I email out this quiz to my audience so that they can take it and maybe help isolate and lock down any of their potential problems with sugar. And I appreciate you so much for taking the time to talk with us tonight and enlighten us a little bit more about the issue of sugar addiction and the issue of how sugar can equally cause health detriment just as much as gluten sensitivity can.
Well, it's, to me, it's a great honor. I've always respected you, and I know that, you know, God has put you on this earth for many reasons, but one of them is to be a forefront runner for helping people have more knowledge about this gluten issue. And as you know, this has become more awareness more and more lately, and sugar addiction is really not a recognized addiction yet, and just like gambling wasn't 10 years ago. So I know that I am also called to be a forefront of that, to bring awareness, because, you know, just like you know, we're dealing with multi-billion-dollar industries that don't want people off gluten, and they sure don't want people off sugar.
Yeah, I mean, it's addictive, and it sells food, sells product, and keeps people sick, unfortunately.
But, you know, the great thing to leave you with is this. There is hope. and there is hope for your health, and there is a place that you can live that feels so great that you get up in the morning with a pep in your step. You go all day. You can think clearly. That's one thing with sugar addiction, that you just can't think clearly. You're distracted. It's associated to depression, and, you know, you just owe it to yourself. You owe it to yourself to see what it's like. Sure, you could always go back to your sugar addiction, but what if you do go off of it and you feel better than you've ever felt in your entire life? I believe everybody should at least give themselves the opportunity to go off gluten and see what their life is like, and also go off sugar and see what it's like. But it's not that you can't think of it like you're missing out. Like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to be able to have that stuff again. No, you know what I say is, you know what? No, I'm not going to get osteoporosis. I'm going to feel phenomenal. I'm not going to have depression. I'm not going to have any of that stuff. That's not worth cookies to me.
Well said. Just think. Well, I'm into a positive really, instead of a negative. Yeah.
Yeah, I just really appreciate, you know, you, Dr. Osborne, and I have since the day I met you, and anybody that's hooked up with you, all of you, you know, listeners, have a great blessing to be connected with him, because he knows what he's talking about, and he has a heart that cares about you, and that's really hard to find. So I'm really glad that those people that are connected with you, they've definitely hooked up with the right person.
Well, thanks so much again. I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and speak with us, and appreciate you forwarding us over that quiz. And I know you're going to be sending me some more information to email out to my listeners and audience about sugar and the detriment of sugar. So appreciate all that you're doing, and appreciate all that you've done for us. And look forward to seeing you again in January at our next seminar. So it was good talking to you. I hope you have a great night.
All right, thank you. And you guys, you know, I just want to just encourage you, just give it that chance. Just give it that time where you can just see how great life can be when you're healthier, because you never know how sick you are until you get healthy.
Absolutely. Well, we'll talk soon. You have a great evening.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.